K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning, K-Mud listeners. This is Mindful Mud. I am Florina. I am your host. I'm a Zen teacher and a mindfulness instructor. And today, I have a wonderful guest. And my guest is Leslie Potter from Pure Joy Parenting. And we will explore a little bit what it means to parent young adults. I think it's a topic that is not spoken a lot. And obviously, I am right in the middle of that transitioning from having a child to having a young adult. And I think Leslie is a little further along with it, but she has lots to share, I'm sure. So I'm going to introduce Leslie a little bit here. Leslie Potter is the founder of Pure Joy Parenting, a parent coach, writer, and longtime student of relationship. For more than 25 years, she has supported parents in moving beyond behavior management and into a deeper understanding of themselves, their children, and the relational patterns that shape family life. Drawing from her background in therapy, coaching, nervous system development, and lived experience as a mother, Leslie guides parents in discovering the internal support that builds their capacity to stay present in the intensity of family relationships. Welcome, Leslie.
Hello. Hello. It's so lovely to be here.
Beautiful morning. You're calling in from Colorado, right? Boulder.
Area. Right outside of Boulder.
Yes. All right. Welcome to K-Mud here.
Thank you.
So Leslie and I, for the listeners, we met, I had to look it up, like 2019 at a parenting conference. That was a good hoot. And just the name, Pure Joy Parenting, is so who you are. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's been a while. So just let's dive in. You say a lot that your daughter is your biggest teacher. Is this kind of why you became a parenting coach? Or?
Yeah, I have this need or this capacity when I'm into something, I have to share it. Right? Like I have to teach it. I don't know. It becomes more alive for me. Mm. It feels like it's never just mine. And so I was a therapist, and of course I was working with individuals and couples. But when I became a parent very late, I didn't adopt my daughter till I was 45 years old as a single mom. That became my excitement. Everything revolved, what I was learning about myself was within that environment. So it was just a natural leaning for me to start to share, especially with other mamas. I mean, I share with dads too, but mamas tended to be the ones that found me. And I got excited about sharing my experience. I don't feel I'm an expert. I think the only experts of your children are you. You're with them 24/7, so you are the expert. But I decided I wanted to guide parents along my inquiry and to support them in their own inquiry so they could find that internal support, as I say, to actually, you know, parent the way they wanted to parent, not the way they think or the conditioning told them to parent.
Wow, so, that's powerful. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. I feel you so much when you share. I had to make it myself, and it's kind of like when I had a child, you know, doing meditation 20 years before even I became a mom, and then realizing, oh, my teacher just shifted into this little baby here, like, and then growing up with my kid as the teacher and on my own spiritual path. And then I was the same, as you said, it's like, yeah, you want to share that inquiry, what's going on, your own internal, deep internal searches of, mm-hmm. of how can we make this more fun instead of so, so painful and more liberating, right? How can we grow from this stuff?
Exactly. Well, as I say, you know, my daughter was abandoned at birth, you know, because she's from China. I adopted her, and I had always left every relationship when I have a hard time when I would start to be afraid I was going to be abandoned or rejected or whatever. And so I always laugh. So then I go and adopt a child that's been abandoned and rejected and lock myself in the house with her 24/7. So I was determined to get this piece.
Oh my goodness.
I could leave men, you know, but there was no
way. There was no way you could leave her. Oh, wow. You really wanted to know it.
Yes. So that became the journey. It's like, okay, the hot box for both of us.
Well, for sure. No way of running away. Yeah.
Yeah. Locked myself in. I could have left. I always tell parents, you can always leave. Social services will come in. But we're not going to. So you might as well ground in, see what's going on inside, decide what's happening, and fortunately get to work through it.
Yeah, that inside, right? That's where the parenting really happens. It's inside of us. We sometimes project so much and then not really paying attention to that internal to the internal shifts that are possible that are going to change everything out there. Yeah, definitely.
And it's hard. You know, my neighbor is 2.5 now, so I get to watch him. It's so blessed because I'm not his mother.
Right, exactly.
When I'm not his mother, I can join his world and enter in, and we play and we have the best time because I'm not projecting onto him that I need him to be who I want him to be or he needs to do anything. I don't have an agenda. And it's so exquisite then to just support another little human coming into the world.
And you can really be open to that, right? To that, child wonder, beauty. Yeah.
But it is not that way when you have your own.
Right, because of the projections. You know, I often feel like, and I think it's safe to say that the love we have for our children is such on another level than any other love. And obviously that brings shakiness, that brings vulnerability, that brings fear and all these really, really intense emotions. And that's an intense work, no matter what. And we won't be perfect at it, but we can show up or not show up for it.
Well, what I find, Florina, is that, you know, for me, I over-supported my daughter not to feel and all these things because I wanted her to have a different experience than I had. So that's what I find. We come in with our templates of how we were parented. And if there's a void in something, like I was under-supported, then I switched over and over-supported my daughter, which wasn't really helpful. I mean, it was. There's benefits and drawbacks to everything. But I find that parents do that. We're coming out of our childhood, and then we kind of project that. One day, one of my friends looked at me and she goes, Leslie, your daughter's not being raised by an alcoholic. Quit treating her that way. You know, like you're trying to compensate for that. She's got you as a mother. She doesn't have a mother that's out there and in and out and in. She has you.
And that was such a blessing. Wow, what a beautiful little check-in.
Mm. It was so blessed. I just went, my daughter's having an experience of a mother that's really there. So that's very different to parent than a child that you think is not getting what they need.
Beautiful. So. Yeah. You know, so when we think about young adults now, right, and we will always be parent. That's just that's what happens. That's not something that's going to go away, right? What do you feel like is shifting, is changing as the role? I know this is a very open question. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to say, I think, this is just my experience. You know, she gave 20 years and I gave 20 years of giving each other everything in a way. I mean, it was like that was the container, 18 years to 20 years, right? And so now that agreement is kind of ended. So that's the thing to really recognize. Okay, I gave her everything. She gave me everything. In a way, our contract is released. So now at 18 or 20, it was very wobbly for me because it's like, well, if I'm not that overcompensating mother or over-supportive or over this and that and the other, and if she's not that dependent child, what are we? You know, and so I found it was another juncture. It came out of those 18 to 20 years I was working. So now I find I'm in a different position with my daughter because she is an adult and she has taken in everything I gave her, right? We don't think they do, but all of a sudden they'll come back and say, you know, can you give me that homeopathic remedy or whatever? You know, it's like, you would never even listen to me when you were young. They're taking it all in. So at 20, you just got to know, actually, you're done in a way teaching, trying to give them what you think they need. And so I had to sit on a different ground. I had to see my daughter as much more capable and competent than I wanted to see her, because I like to be the capable and competent one. So I had to kind of like, back off a little bit and really start to support her in coming into her own by reminding her who she is. So that's what started the shift. And then I had to anchor myself much deeper in myself, where as a parent, I was much more anchored in her well-being. And that's been a big shift.
Yeah. So tell me a little more about that support of young adults. How can we support them to really be fully themselves without putting our agenda on them?
Well, they are already fully themselves. So I think we have to see them that way.
Good.
When they're children, we know that they're still developing, so we offer different things. But by 20, we start to see they are really being themselves. And so if I can see my daughter not through my five-year-old eyes or think she's five, because sometimes she'll go, Mommy, Mommy, Mommy. I mean, she's 26. You know, she gets distressed and still, Mommy. And you know, all
I need it.
Trumpets come in and I'm ready, you know. And it's like, whoo, 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 back off, Leslie, back off, back off. So that's where I have to sit back and go, okay, she's stressed, she regressed, and she's coming to me, but what happens if I don't go back? And I always say this with parents when I work with parents, their kids will take two steps forward. And that everything feels good, and then their kids will regress, and the parents call me in their panic, like, they regret, you know, they're going back. And I'm like, well, where are you? It's like, we go back with them. So that's what I talk about when I talk about anchoring. When she goes back, of course she comes to me, you know, when she panics or whatever. But if she comes back to me as a five-year-old and I don't treat her like a five-year-old, I just stay anchored and like, okay, honey, I hear you. I got you. But I know that she's a 26-year-old. Then I offer something different. If I offer to a five-year-old, I'm probably going to jump in and rescue. I'll give you an example. She is getting my daughter lives in Tokyo now, way far away from me. And she's getting a new apartment. Okay. Well, if she was here getting a new apartment, I would have done everything. I would have gotten the gas on, the electricity. I would have helped her move. I would have, you know, man, I love that stuff. But she's in Tokyo. So she's telling me, she goes, Mom, I've never moved before. You know, I can hear all my things. Well, you might. And she starts telling me what she's done. She's found somebody that has a license. She's got friends that are going to help her. She's found a van. I mean, she is so competent. And every minute I'm wanting to take over. You know, it's like, because I want to treat her like she's never moved before. Well, I need to take over. And so I just keep settling. I just keep anchoring. And I just go, gosh, honey, you are so competent. You got this, because her, Mama, I've never moved before, is her little young part. Like, Mommy, help me.
Come fly to Tokyo.
Yeah, help. But if I go there, because I want to, because that's what I love to do, I'm a helper. Then I anchor in and just go, oh, God, you really are doing this. How can I be supportive?
All right.
What would you like from me all the way over in Colorado? Right. She wanted a new bed, so I was able to offer her some money for a new bed. That's what, because I did want to offer something to her experience, but I can't buy the bed, I can't move the furniture, I can't speak Japanese. But man, I want to get in there when I hear that little waiver, like, I've never moved before. You know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. My son, right, is 19. Lots of listeners know him really well. But that whole trip when he was decking out his truck to go on a little road trip for himself, I felt so helpless. I'm not a mechanic. I'm not yada, yada, yada. And I felt like I want to just do it for him. And I had lots of ideas. But I realized, wait, this is his project. And then I had to really sit with my own guilt, right? Of not being there to either just give him the money for a brand new cover up, whatever, or to really trust him that he's going to figure this out. It's going to be hard. And I watched it and it was hard, but he did it. And just that kind of stuff of like being with my own feelings and of course with 19 you still have a lot of like needs and demands on your parent, right? And of course that all falls on me. And then sitting with my own guilt and then getting that like you're not helping me enough, you're blah de da, the circumstances are not right, and it's like okay. But well, I trust that you can do this.
In pure joy, I like to say guilt is the refusal to be intimate with what is.
Right.
So the guilt comes from what I should be doing or what I haven't done. But when you said, when I got really intimate with what is, it's that my son has taken on a project.
Exactly. Right? And I'm there emotionally big time with support, feeling when something breaks, I'm there for him, like brainstorming, but ultimately... And that anchor is like going back to that anchor. I don't know how parents do it without a real serious spiritual practice because I don't know what I would have done.
Well, I think it's really, you know, like I like to say, to help someone, you have to see them as helpless.
Mm.
Just think about that.
Yeah.
If I want to help you, that means I'm projecting onto you that you're helpless. So I like to use the word support more, like what is support comes underneath. But if I see my daughter as helpless, like she's over in Japan and she's helpless, then I can't see her as competent and capable.
Right. That's
so
trust.
That might be a big one for parents to know, you know, if you have that urge to help them, just ask yourself, am I seeing them as helpless? And then, of course, you know, parents, we're supposed to be helpful. I mean, that's our job, right? Because little ones, I do have to help my little 2.5-year-old. You know, it's like it's different. But when they're adults now or as they age, if you can start seeing their competence. I always tell parents are always afraid for their kids. I was like, your kid doesn't want to die. They just want to eat unhealthy food because they're teenagers, you know, but they want to be healthy. Don't see them as wanting to be unhealthy. They don't want to die when they take risks. They're teenagers, right? So if we can just see developmentally where they are when we get afraid that we need to help them, just see their competency. My 2.5-year-old, he's so incredibly competent on the things a 2.5-year-old can do. So if I overhelp him, even there, if I oversupport him or undersupport him, either one, he can't feel that ground underneath him. That's just that middle ground, just support.
And that takes a lot of presence, right? A lot of awareness and tuning in to, because then again, each child is different. Like, you know, folks with different children know this really well. Like what one 2.5-year-old can do and wants to do, another 2.5-year-old is not into it or can't do it yet or is already way further or whatever, you know? So that presence of tuning in, where is my child? And what is
I actually don't say, where is my child? I say, where am I?
Got
in
it.
Relation to the child.
Right.
Because if I can find out where I am, because each child's going to trigger something different from me. If I have a child that's a little behind, I believe they're behind, you know, by the conditioning, that's going to trigger me going and over-supporting. If I perceive I have a kid that's really out there, you know, like the culture says, this kid is really early and he's really smart, I may under-support him. Because of my internal, you know, how I perceive things.
So that confusion sometimes between support and control, I think especially when it comes to younger, like to older kids or young adults. Yeah. What is that? What do you want to say to that one?
Yeah, like, well, I'll give you an example with the 2.5-year-old, and it could relate to the older one. But
okay.
I was watching him the other day, and he had a balloon, a helium balloon that went up way high up into the ceiling. Oh, and he wanted it. So I got a broom, and I pulled it down. And, of course, I say, now hold the balloon. And as soon as he got it, he went, he let it go again. You know, we started playing this game. It was like, okay, so I get it with the broom. The third time, it went too far over, so I couldn't get it with the broom, right? And oh, you would have thought he was going to die. I mean, he was just like, and I started noticing what happened in me. And part of me wanted to go and soothe him. Another part of me wanted to go logic him. Well, you know, if you hadn't let it go, it wouldn't have gone up there. And instead, I just decided to stay with myself. I anchored in myself right next to him. And I did reflect back. It's just like he went, ah, I went, ah, this is so hard. But he was through it in like 30 seconds because I anchored in myself instead of trying to over-support him, which would be, oh, honey, come here. Or, you know, you shouldn't have let it go. Those would be my two extremes. And I just noticed it in myself. And I thought, well, what if I just stay with that and I don't move? But I'm here, as you say, present with him. Literally within 30 seconds, he had moved through.
And again, as you said before, like you're present with yourself. I think we so underestimate, and I played with this for the last 19 years, like that co-regulation, especially between a child and a mom or a parent, however, co-regulation between all of us, right? Constantly, that's relationship, that nervous system co-regulation. We so underestimate what that does, right? Especially for a young child, but also for an older child. If I can stay present and regulate my own feelings, suddenly the child is, oh, I got this too.
Well, it's even for me, it's more that once I've anchored, I become a safe place for her to bring whatever. Like he could bring his tears. I wasn't trying to talk him out of it. I wasn't trying to soothe him for anything. So it wasn't even a co-regulation. It was that I anchored in myself. And so then she feels safe enough to bring all of her, even her dysregulation. She can bring that and it's going to go into the ground.
It starts, yeah, absolutely. And it starts, I think we need to be very gentle, us as parents. Sometimes this might take a while, right? That anchoring. Sometimes
it's taken me my whole life. I mean, I just got better at it because my daughter went through a crisis. She had a breakup, her first real breakup with a guy.
Right.
It was so.
How can you help there, right?
Well, because I had protected her from feeling abandoned and rejected her whole life.
Right.
Because I didn't want her to feel that.
Right.
My daughter was abandoned. She needed to feel that with a safe person.
Right, exactly.
If I could have stayed anchored, she could have brought that to me earlier, and she would have known that it just moves through like feelings do, right? Mm-hmm. But because I wasn't able to do that, or I thought I was doing the best thing by protecting her, she had to experience that. So I had to really learn in the last 5 months going through that with her how to anchor again. Like, what does anchoring really look like? Because I would go from rescue or just abandon, just like, I don't want to deal with this. Those were my two extremes from my template, from my childhood.
Right. I realize for me it's a lot these two feelings of fear and trust. That I'm still very much, that's the connection of like, okay, am I in fear? And where can I trust? Mm-hmm. Where can I shift that around? And what is that fear? Like really in myself, nothing to do with my son often, like, or just, first of all, I had to like feel it in myself and really be with it and nurture that and take care of it. Yeah. I want to remind everybody you are listening to KMUD, and my guest today is Leslie Potter from Pure Joy Parenting, and we're talking about how to be mindful as a parent in relationship to our children. So I feel like there's a lot of this connection separation dilemma, right? When it comes to, when it comes to children, and that shifts, and it has to shift constantly, right? While they grow older. Mm-hmm. So, what is your approach there? Like, how do we nurture connection to our adult children?
Well, I think we have to understand ourselves first. I've just created a nervous system, kind of what I've noticed in the nervous system. And stage one, I call this about just existence. just that's the purest connection, is just when I go just be with my 2-year and half-year-old. You know, he doesn't need anything from me other than just, we just hang out making mud pies last week. You know, and it's just such a pure connection. Well, if you were I'll use myself as an example. I had an under-supported stage one. I was the third child. My dad was just getting into medical school. They just really didn't have a lot of bandwidth for another babe. They weren't bad people. They just didn't have a lot of support for me, right? So I learned very, very early to be self-reliant, independent, which beautiful skills. But I didn't learn how to really rest into support. Right. So since I'm under supported, I'm going to over support connection. I'm going to try to purchase love by over supporting. If that makes sense. Purchase my daughter. Like if I'm, that's how I try to get connection, is by taking care of her, buying things, making sure I'm always there. So I don't have that capacity to healthily separate and feel like the connection is still there. The love is still there. I start to panic. Just because of my history, right? And so if we understand our history more than how do we stay connected or or healthily separated, we can start to recognize when I start to panic, when she doesn't text me back, I start to feel that panic inside because she's all the way in Tokyo, then I can actually connect with myself. And so what I do is I can sit with myself and say, okay, I don't know. Maybe she's dead. I don't know. All that's really happening, though, is I just haven't heard from her. I just haven't gotten a text. That's it. So instead of like texting her 3,000 times and trying to reconnect and be there, my anchor is that I have to connect very, very deeply with that core energy that says, if I just exist, it's going to be bad. I have to do something. You know, I have to text her. I have to go get it. I have to seek it. So for me, the anchoring has been to sit, especially when I'm not having contact. And this can happen a lot with adult children because they are doing their lives. They don't need to contact us as much as we would like to hear from them. So it can activate a lot of, you know, kind of panic if you didn't have a lot of support to stay connected with your own being as a child. You may always be looking at, what do I need to do to get connection? What do I need to do to get connection? And so for me, the anchoring had to be like, I just have to stay with myself. And during my daughter's breakup, she overconnected. You know, I was on the phone with her for 12 hours. Ah, you know, I was, this is crazy. I still couldn't anchor in myself to finally go, I need to take a break. You know, I'll get back to you. Because I was terrified I would lose the connection. So if we understand ourselves, I think that's the biggest piece of like, healthy separation was terrifying for me because that meant, you know, I was abandoned or rejected.
And healthy separation does not mean loss. It's the opposite.
At all.
Yeah.
It means connecting with myself.
Right.
And then therefore trusting myself that the relationship with myself can stay, can I ground? Mm-hmm. And then my daughter can come to me instead of me going out trying to seek connection.
Very good. Yeah. You write this exactly in one of your Substack. Just that tracking the pressure to fix, soothe, control, or restore connection inside the nervous system, right? That's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, because it's the fear. If I don't do those things, I will lose connection with the other. But it's really that we abandon ourselves to get connection. And not everybody does, but I was trained to do that. And again, I don't blame my parents or anything. It was just the environment that I lived in. So it was really smart for me to abandon myself to try to get connection. It's not smart in my parenting. It's not smart as an adult. But so all of my work is about updating the strategies to recognize, oh, in reality now, I am connected to my daughter, even when I don't hear from her for a week or two. The connection is still there. But if I start to panic and then I try to get it, that's when it's not healthy.
Yeah.
Right?
I love how you say that updating. right? We do have to update. We can't just live by learned behavior from our childhood. That's a very restricted life. Yes. And we would do it if we're not putting some awareness, some internal work into it. And it's so worth it to liberate ourselves and try new things. Why not? Something that's a little bit more up to date.
Well, they talk about the predictive brain. I don't know if you know Lisa Feldman's work, but the predictive brain is always going to have you do the same thing over and over because it was safety. It was smart for me to abandon myself. So as soon as I start to feel a loss of connection, my predictive brain's going to go, danger, danger, danger. Here, it goes into my file cabinet. It says, this is what you do. You go and you abandon yourself and then you get reconnected. By giving her money or by doing something, you know, for a moment I get that reconnection. So they say the only way to shift that pattern is to do something unpredictable. That's how you change the predictive brain. So if I want to give my daughter money because I panic, the unpredictable thing is not to give her money. And then I have to tolerate everything. Maybe she'll think I don't love her. Maybe she thinks I don't support her. Maybe she'll think, you know, I just panic inside, because that's how I purchase connection. It was with money or through love or through I'll always be available, whatever it is. So the updating is to do something unpredictable. If I always answer the phone when she calls, the unpredictable move is to not answer it and then call her back in 5 minutes or something.
Yeah, to create new habits.
But something very hard to break when the predictive brain is very, you know, connected to the nervous system. The social system is about connection. I feel the nervous system isn't really about connection. It's about biology. Its job is to keep you biologically safe. The social system is much more about welcoming, connection, you know, I need to belong. So when I feel like I don't belong, sends a signal to my nervous system. The nervous system sends me a charge of energy and says, rescue, 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 quick.
Yeah, they're very interlinked, the social and the nervous system.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's all survival. It's so helpful sometimes just to one of the big things for me as a parent is just comes back to I need to be kind to myself. It's so hard. Like with my own flaws, with my own, you know, shortcomings, I have to first be kind to that and just say, okay, this is what's up. I'm probably a failure. I'm probably a failure. That's what I'm saying. Probably, right? It's like, it feels like I'm really messing this all completely up. So I'm showing up right there, right? And then going from there and rebuilding. I was like, okay, and what is going well? And where can I shift? Just as you said, just a little bit, right?
Well, my work lately has just been, how do I translate? When the social gives a signal to the nervous system, how can I start being a translator to the nervous system? Because I'm the one giving it the signal that's going danger, right? I'm sitting on the couch waiting for a text. I'm not in physical danger. The nervous system's all about biology. It's totally fine. But the social system sends that signal in, right? Because the social system is alarmed. So I'm learning, can I translate? When that social system comes on, can I slow it down enough that it doesn't send a signal to the nervous system to give me that shot of energy?
So you're activating the upper nervous system, which means more awareness, more prefrontal cortex ability of pausing, of slowing down, of reflecting, of really feeling and holding your feelings instead of just acting them out, right?
Well, that's adult capacity.
Right.
The adult capacity has the capacity to welcome even the feelings. You know, we always talk about tolerating the feelings as if they're bad. You know, like what if we could welcome them? But not send a signal over from the past that tells the nervous system that these feelings are dangerous.
Right. I like to read another little passage that I really liked. I think it's in your newest Substack. I would really, listener, if you feel like inspired by what we're talking about, go to Pure Joy Parenting, the website.
Actually, my Substack is under Leslie Potter.
Okay, Leslie Potter, and then some good stuff there. And by the way, let's open the phone lines. Yeah, I haven't even thought about it. We're so deep into it. So if you have a question or a comment for Leslie, please give us a call here at 707-923-3911 and Sheila will put you on. So I'd like to share something quick that you wrote. You're writing, "This is one of the reasons I find parenting so arresting. You watch meaning being formed right in front of you. You feel it happen in the space between a parent and a child. The moment contact wobbles, the moment shame or fear enters the room, the moment someone reaches for control, collapse, performance, sweetness, distance. Beneath the behavior, something is being interpreted. Beneath the reaction, something is getting decided. And the question I'm sitting with more and more isn't, how do I change this behavior? It's, what meaning is landing right now?" I find this very powerful.
Yeah, because that's that whole social system, whole social system, if it wasn't supported and welcomed, it's going to put meaning to every time that you don't talk to me or you do like this or you don't text me back. The meaning it's going to be is like, I'm not alive. I don't survive. I can't live. I'm not welcomed.
So we have to figure out our patterns, right? Our internal Absolutely. Patterns. Why do we respond with fear or with abandonment or with whatever it is that we respond and holding that, right? It's that, yeah.
Yeah. If they go to my Substack, you can see I do the six stages. And if we can understand if we were over supported or under supported in those stages, then we can start to, like you say, offer that kindness to ourselves. Of course I panic every time I don't hear from my daughter. She does too. She'll go, "Mom, mom, 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 mom," you know, because of our fear. She wasn't welcomed in life. I wasn't welcomed in life. We attuned together. And so then we become very dependent on each other as that anchor. And so, of course, we panic when we don't get it, right? And then it's like, oh, if I can do that, how can I stay? I like to say my acronym for STAY is support to anchor yourself. Support to anchor yourself, and that means in reality. The reality is that I just haven't gotten a text from my daughter. The reality is not that she's dead in a corner somewhere or whatever my brain tells her, or that she doesn't love me, or that we've lost connection. Those are the meaning pieces. So if I can stay connected to reality, meaning doesn't come up. All it is she hasn't texted me yet. And then
staying
I can stay in reality.
Yeah, staying with what happens. And what do you feel like when you do that? What changes?
It's so beautiful. What changes is that I can welcome that life force that I just, you know, sent a signal to the nervous system, like, give me some energy. And it goes, "Ah!" And I can go, "Oh my God," I can breathe and I can go, "This is my life force. I don't want to discharge it. I don't want to repress it. It's like an electrical circuit. My circuit just got bigger and I can take in more electricity. And then the third stage I do is then if I can ground it into reality, it's mine right now. Then that energy, instead of going into she's dead or she doesn't love me or whatever, it goes into going out and being in my garden, or it goes into getting up and making my breakfast. It goes into reality of life becomes where I join life instead of joining my meaning.
And you take your power back, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I never gave it away.
No,
I abandoned it. But it's like I abandoned it. I squeezed that circuit because I didn't know that I could actually welcome that much energy. Because as a child, I was told I was too big. I was too this. I was too that. And of course, my social says, I'll give all that up just to connect.
Right.
That's smart. You know, as a child, that's smart. Just not smart now.
Mm-hmm. But I remind everybody again, you are listening to Mindful Mud. My guest today is Leslie Potter from Pure Joy parenting, and we're exploring what does that mean to be mindful, to be grounded, to be aware in our own relationship to our children, no matter what age, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love your mindful mud because it actually feels like I'm kind of in the mud.
Exactly.
When I'm in that, when she just has a text back, it's like I'm stuck in the mud and I'm struggling to get out by putting all this meaning to it and this and that and the other. And it's like, all I got to do is just make a mud pie. You know, like my little friend, last week we made mud pies. Haven't done that since I was probably his age.
How cool. Yeah.
It was so fun. We were just smashing mud. He wasn't resisting the mud. He was just fully in it. And I think that's in reality, we can just bring that life force in and just sit there and be in it.
Welcoming the shakiness, the wobbliness, the insecurities, the vulnerability, all of it. For me, it's like the more I welcome what actually is, the more the less I resist and think it should be different. It should never be different. It's just what it is right now, no matter how that looks like. Then there is change. Just as you said, when you pause, suddenly, there's a flow again. There's this electricity that stays, that is there, that's available. If I'm really with the moment as it is. And I think a lot of the, you know, when you talk nervous system, the judgmental stuff that comes in, right? Oh, I should be different. I should act different. I'm such a failure. I'm like blah, 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 blah. All of that stuff is really what doesn't let us move forward and move through. And this is why, I'm calling it mindful mud, because, man, this life is muddy. We better embrace it and say yes to it.
Yeah, and we have to remember all of those conclusions, all those meanings are protective.
Right.
So for me, when I took it out of even the feeling realm and I just brought it into the energetic realm, it was much easier to work with. So when I just think, instead of like I'm feeling anxious, it's like I know a big charge is coming through me. Right. And so if I take the word anxious off of it and I just go, I've got a big charge right now and I'm trying to squeeze it, or I'm trying to discharge it, or I'm trying to get rid of it. Then I can just go, well, what's it like if I just ground the charge?
Right. There you go. And build that capacity. Yes.
Yeah. And I imagine my chest expanding, my circuits getting bigger, and I'm going, it's just not anxiety. It's a charge, because that's what anxiety is. Right. You get charged in your body. So it's like if I just contain that charge and just do like this, then you know how the flow is, and then she'll text me usually. I mean, it's not to get her to text me, but it's like, but then I don't even care. It's
exactly.
Like, oh, by the way.
Because you don't care, the connection is there again. So let's talk a little bit about this charged work of boundaries, like healthy boundaries, like because it goes both ways, right? Let's talk about young adults here. They're definitely putting up their boundaries because they have to, right? They have to kind of disconnect from us. They have to find their own ways. But sometimes I'm also curious, like, what about our own, right? How do
Go ahead. My definition of a boundary is very different than the traditional one. Mine is what's okay with me and what's not okay with me about how I treat myself, not about how the other person treats me. So I feel in traditional parenting, we have it all backwards. We like children need limits and boundaries. Children have limits and boundaries. They already have them. We need our limits and boundaries. We need to be clear on what we're willing to give and what we're not willing to give, what we're offering to our children, what we're not offering. Right. So for me, I would cross my boundary by over offering because I don't want my daughter to have a reaction. Right. And then I would want to bind her, like, don't be mad at me. Right. And so I always ask myself when I'm getting ready to set a boundary, how am I treating myself? How am I treating myself right now? Am I treating myself as if, you know, I'm a first bank and I have all the money in the world to give away? No, that's not treating myself very kindly. It's not treating my financial fiduciary very well, right? If I'm saying I'll do anything and everything for my adult, I'll drop everything and do it right away. That's not treating myself very kindly because I just gave up my tea with my best friend. Or I did something like to try to get connection, but I wasn't treating myself very kindly. So anytime I want to set a boundary for myself, a healthy personal boundary, I just keep asking, how am I treating myself? And then my daughter will meet my boundary. She will be bound by my taking care of myself, but I never have to say, you need to do something so that I'm okay. That's what people think a boundary is. I'm going to bind you so that I feel good about myself. That, to me, is not the appropriate use of a boundary.
That's very powerful. Yes, I'm so with you right there. It is about my own relationship with myself, right?
Yes.
And not being trampled on by myself or other people. It's normally me. Because I'm not really taking care of that.
Yeah.
And first of all, it's just that question. What do I actually need? What
yeah,
is it?
But also just go back to no one can tramp and take advantage of you. No one can trample
exactly.
on you. Mm. You're an adult. You know, if someone's starting to trample on you, you can say, oh, if you keep trampling, I'm going to walk out of the room. Not, you can't trample me. That would be trying to set the boundary on the other. Of course they can. That's what they do. A kid tramples. I mean, you know, you can't ask me for that. Of course you can. You just did. But if you ask me for that over and over again, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to remove myself, or I'm not going to be offering anything.
I think it's really important when you said, you know, kids already have boundaries, which is true. If we let them, I think they might get codependently confused sometimes if they are learning that they have to take care of us. However, and then they might drop those healthy boundaries. However, I do think, kids have their boundaries. That's it's
all the
a natural
time. My
thing.
Little neighbor, I sprayed him with water. He goes, no, you know, it's like,
and our young adults do too. And fair enough. And our inner job is to not take those as rejection, as yada, 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 right? But actually,
well,
just
that
like
would be how you treat yourself.
Exactly.
If you treat yourself as a rejectable person, you will personalize it. But if you treat yourself as, you know, your own being, and you can tolerate hearing no. Some of us can't. No is very hard for me to hear, right? So, of course, I would do everything in my power not to hear no, but then I would overstep my boundary and then get mad at her for wanting so much. You know, it's like crazy.
It is. It's so well put, right? We project on each other and then we get exactly what we didn't want.
Yeah, right? It's like, no, that's my job.
And isn't that, I mean, that is really the truth for any relationship with a partner, it's that, okay, first I really need to understand what's up in my own self. So I just want to shout out one more time, last moment for callers. If you do have a question here, give us a shout, or perhaps a little of your own story, 707-923-3911, but please keep it short and topic related. That would be wonderful. Wow. Yeah. You know, it's just this week, just school got out, right? And I think there's a lot of transitioning going on. When we're in the groove of a school year, you know, that's one thing. But then summer starts. And for some, it means graduation. For some, it means, you know, older kids, they might move on to college. It might mean whatever it might mean. I think it's a good time to kind of do that reflection of where am I staying with my kid or kids? What is the relationship? How does it need to change? What do you think?
Well, I often feel, you know, just like, again, I go back to my 2.5-year-old. He's my laboratory right now. You know, he's going through transition every other minute. We're transitioning all the time. And I notice with him, if I can stay with myself, his transitions happen very naturally. If I try to control the transition, if I try to make it better, or I try to make it less, or I try to, you know, put my agenda on it, whatever it is, that's when it gets hard for both of us. It's like resistance. So he's learning to potty train. So he walks around naked a lot when he's with me, because I figure you can pee in the grass or let's poop in the potty, right? And so we wanted to go down to the mailroom. We live in co-housing. We wanted to walk down to the mailroom. And I was like, okay, well, let's put a diaper on. He's like, I don't want to put a diaper on. I say, okay, well, what do you want to do? We carry this potty with him. So we have a little, you know, kid potty. So the transition was smooth because I was able to say, hey, I'm just going to stay with you where you are. I'm going to stay with myself. It wasn't a big deal. But if I'd been embarrassed, if, you know, if I wanted him to wear a diaper, if I wouldn't want people to see that he was naked, if I had all my issues going on, I couldn't have moved and joined with the transition. He was very clear about, let's just take the potty. Sure enough, we took it. We were in the kids' room, and he pooped in the potty. You know, it was like, great. Potty's traveling. Right? So I think transition is just so triggering for so many of us because there was so much control. Because transitions for parents are very different than transitions for kids. Parents need to get to work, or they got to get you in the car, or they got to get, you know, the transition becomes, I have to pull somebody or push somebody. So again, if we locate and anchor in ourselves, like when I anchored in myself, unfortunately, I'm not his mother. I didn't have to be anywhere. There was no time. I'm going to honor that. Then I was able to just anchor in myself and work with him around what would make the transition work, right? And so I find, you talked about flow. So I find when I can get back into my anchor, I can start to join and flow with what is actually reality versus.
Again, presence is really, is when we can stay present, right, with ourselves, then the answers are there. Yeah. And we'd like to get a certain, and I hear this a lot from parents who like, what can I do? Give me like a 12-step program or give me a 10-step program. Like if that happens, I do this. I'm like, no, that's not how this works because it depends on the moment. So yeah. I think really the biggest, and what I hear you said, biggest thing is find your anchor and cultivate that anchor. And it's such a, sometimes, as a parent, we're such doers, right? Fixers. Mm-hmm. We want to go out there and do things and fix. And the biggest thing we can actually do is work with that, our own nervous system, our own equanimity, our own authenticity, and really becoming more and more present in well, just everyday life.
I'll give a little practical for, especially for younger parents and older too, but just try if your kid's resisting you, wait for 30 seconds longer, you know, and then it'll be a minute longer. Because my experience, if I wait and I come back and I anchor before I jump and try to push or force, then the child moves, right? Often they're no, their boundary. My daughter was this way. I'd say, you want ice cream? She'd go, no. I'd say, what flavor? Vanilla, right? She just needed, because my energy was coming in too hard. But if I could just pause and not take it personally and say she's rejecting me and me, you know, just
she doesn't want my ice cream.
Yeah, whatever. You know, no. I said, okay. If I can just wait 30 seconds longer and then I would say, what flavor? She would say vanilla. So that's what I find with him too. If he's starting to resist, if I start to push or pull that resistance, I just go, okay, I'm just going to,
30
back
seconds.
Myself up a little bit for 30 seconds, a minute, then he moves.
Yeah, and that minute can save us a half an hour of dispute and terribleness, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I've been there many times, for sure.
So
for parents, just to wrap it up, we're coming to the end here. You know, what would you say to parents listening who think they have made so many mistakes? And, like, what would you want them to know?
I would like for them to know that there's benefits and drawbacks to every single movement. There is no mistake, but if you get one-sided and you think you did all bad, you're not finding out what the good is. I mean, I grew up in a crazy household. I had a crazy alcoholic mother. It was horrible. I wouldn't want that for anyone. The benefits is I'm sitting here with you right now. Mental health was the void. I began to discover and explore who I was and why people drink and this and that and the other. So there were benefits and drawbacks. So once we're able to see that in any memory that we have, then we can move forward. This is John DeMartini's work. He does a lot with that every moment has a positive and a negative, a benefit and a drawback. So if you think you made a bunch of mistakes, go back into those mistakes and see what was the benefit. You already know the drawback. You're stuck on that one. Go back in and find out what was the benefit
of
that.
Yeah.
And then once it's equilibrated, you let go and move forward.
Beautiful, beautiful. So how can people get in touch with you, learn more about what you're doing, Leslie?
Yeah, well, they can go to my website, which is purejoyparenting.com. But mostly I'm writing more on Substack these days, which that's under Leslie Potter at Substack.
Do you want to spell your name?
Yeah, L-E-S-L-I-E. And like Harry, P-O-T-T-E-R. It's very easy to remember. You forget who I am, go, Harry Potter. Oh, Leslie
very
Potter.
Good. Very good. Yeah, I would very much encourage listeners who want to dive a little deeper into the mysteriousness and beautifulness of parenting and the mud of it all, right? I think having some, what I really like about, you're not into like behavior correction and right, like something needs to get fixed. However, it's a journey and it's this awakening. I call it awakening through parenting, you know, it's really this work and it's so worth it because it's not just about the fear. Is it good for the kid? It's about, oh, I am growing up with the child. How cool is that? Like,
it's a profound relationship. All of this is a relationship
right.
issue. You know, it's extremely profound just because the nature of it. As you say, it comes with this massive amount of love, massive amount of capacity to stay in intensity.
Right.
So it's extremely profound on both sides.
Mm. Thank you, Leslie. What a joy it's been. I hope listeners got, I'm sure they got something out of this, in one way or the other. And for you, thank you for listening in, your listeners out there. And I really encourage you again to sign up for Leslie's Substack.
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.